Encanto is the newest animated Disney musical, and it is stuffed with characters who wield magical powers and perform lavish musical numbers written by Lin-Manuel Miranda. But for all its magical realism, it's also a fairly simple story about a family whose bonds need healing. I'm Stephen Thompson, and today we are talking about Encanto on Pop Culture Happy Hour from NPR.
This message comes from NPR sponsor Capital One. With Early Paycheck, you can get your direct deposit up to 2 days earlier. And with no fees or minimums on checking and savings accounts, banking with Capital One is the easiest decision. Terms apply. See CapitalOne.com/bank. Capital One N.A., member FDIC.
Joining me today is Monica Castillo. She's an arts and culture reporter with Colorado Public Radio. Hey, Monica.
Hi.
Hey, it's great to have you. Also here with us is film critic Carlos Aguilar. Welcome back, Carlos.
Thank you for having me.
It is a pleasure. So Encanto tells the story of the Madrigal family, whose members are tucked away in the mountains of Colombia. They're able to protect their community through magical powers they receive at an early age. One has super strength, one has super hearing, one affects the weather, one is a shapeshifter, one makes flowers bloom with a wave of her hand. But Mirabel, voiced by Stephanie Beatriz, didn't get a superpower and goes through life having to cope with her family's disappointment, not to mention her own uncertain role in life. Soon, however, Mirabel begins to have visions of an existential threat to the magical house that gives the family its powers, but she faces skepticism from her abuela Alma, who is voiced by Maria Cecilia Botero. She has to navigate her complex relationships with her extended family, including her estranged uncle Bruno, voiced by John Leguizamo. Encanto was directed by Jared Bush and Byron Howard. They're the team that directed Zootopia. Jared Bush wrote the screenplay with co-director Charisse Castro-Smith. Encanto is in theaters now. Monica Castillo, I'm going to start with you. What did you think of Encanto?
I was actually pretty mixed about it. Even though it's very upbeat visually, I was very charmed. They have a lot of fun effects. You know, using all those magical powers allows you so much creativity. Didn't quite love that the story was just so simple. It's just very much about family love. There's no villain. There's no antagonist. There's nothing that, you know, they really have to band together to fight. They just have to band together. So for me, it kind of felt like it lacked like any kind of stakes, or I'm thinking of all the different classic Disney movies that I would have gotten excited for. It fell short.
Okay. How about you, Carlos?
I mean, I liked it. I do agree that there are, you know, elements about it that I felt were, you know, perhaps overstuffed. Like, I felt like there were too many characters and too many sort of things pushing against each other without having a villain. And the magic element of it are some of the things that, you know, we understand as like to why this family has powers, the miracle, and a lot of the things felt a little sort of like vague to me. Not that everything has to be sort of like, you know, clear in Disney movies, but I do feel like some of these things were like sort of like wishy-washy. But in general, I feel like the songs were good, most of them. You know, there's varying degrees to them. I feel like the ballad is probably my favorite. But yeah, I enjoyed it visually. I think it's really spectacular, and I like that the cast was mostly, you know, Colombians or Colombian Americans, or people with Colombian heritage. So I'm, you know, I'm perhaps a little more positive than Monica, but I do, it's probably not my favorite Disney release this year, and they had like three of them, you know, so it's probably not my favorite of the three.
Okay. I came down in a roughly similar way. I was mixed on this film, and I often find myself like one star ahead of other people on Disney and Pixar movies. I usually like them a little bit more than most people do. But I think this one, I just came down kind of right in the middle. I will say, in defense of the lack of a villain, I had grown very tired of villainy formulas in Disney movies that always culminate in the villain falling into a crevasse or whatever. I'm glad that no villain needed to fall into a crevasse. I don't necessarily need that kind of conflict built up. For me, I think my biggest issue with this movie is the songs. The songs are by Lin-Manuel Miranda, and look, I'm a Hamilton guy, I'm an In the Heights guy, I'm a Moana guy, and these songs for me fell really flat. My memory for songs, like whatever the last song I heard is the song that is stuck in my head until the next time I hear a song. And so sometimes, you know, I'll just walk out of a theater and like whatever that closing song is just like beating in my head for the whole way home. And for this, as soon as I stepped out of the theater, the song that was going through my head was from Moana. Just the reverberations of Lin-Manuel Miranda formulas put catchier Lin-Manuel Miranda works in my head. I did find this movie sort of sweet and affecting and with some lovely vocal performances, with some very nice and striking visuals. But like you guys, I did kind of come away from it like, that was fine.
Yeah, I mean, I will say that, as you said, the lack of villains, a thing that's been happening in Disney movies, you know, in recent years. I feel like when we think about those villains falling off a cliff or whatnot, we're thinking about like maybe 10, 15 years ago, because there hasn't really been a villain like that in a long time. Like the Frozen movies have like, you know, a reveal villain. Frozen 2 has no villain, and that movie is incomprehensible in any case.
I like Frozen 2.
I could not tell you what Frozen 2 is about. Magical forces and ethereal sort of like, you know, things in the sky and whatnot. So I do feel like, you know, the fact that there are no villains, that they've been very deliberate, you know, in recent years just to not have any, feels to me sort of like a rejection of the real world fact that there are bad people. And I feel like, you know, it's interesting to me that, yes, we want to move forward into like the, you know, conflicts that don't pin someone as a bad person, but there are bad people in the world, you know. So I think that stepping away from that feels to me like perhaps sheltering, you know, audiences too much from that. And in terms of the songs, I will say that I did love the Spanish language one, Dos Oruguitas, that plays sort of like in the most emotional, you know, sort of striking scene in the movie. Ay, oruguitas, no se aguanta. Hay que crecer, aparte y volver hacia adelante. Seguirás, vienen milagros, vienen crisálidas. Hay que partir y construir su propio futuro. So I wanted more of that relationship, that drama, that sort of like real, you know, sort of like depth to why people and families do what they do, the sort of things that we don't know about our families, the decisions that were taken before we were born that sort of like influence who we are. Sort of that relationship to me between Mirabel and and Abuela was to me sort of the core of the story. And I wish that instead of like sort of like wrapping it in all these other, you know, myriad of things, that we had, you know, that the movie had focused on that and sort of like really make a point.
Can I just say, Disney villains are sometimes some of my favorite characters in the movie. There's the chance to explore like the forbidden emotions that kids don't always get to act out, or, you know, the quote unquote bad impulses. Taking that element away just feels like, oh, you're, you know, sanitizing this down so no one can get offended. No one can, you know, we're not going to go into, you know, the Shadowlands or anything like that, or the elephant graveyard. It just feels like we're losing a piece of geography there. I also punished myself twice over by watching Vivo the next night, which was another Lin-Manuel Miranda musical that also came out this year. It was the same issue. I just kept thinking about other better songs that he's done before. And yeah, this is from that song, and this is from that song in the Heights, and this is from that song in Hamilton. And that's disappointing in a way. And I wonder if it's not just like he's gotten so in demand, he doesn't have time to write or, you know, create or incorporate new techniques, sounds, something to kind of take that next step forward in his musical career. So now we're just getting rehashed microwave versions of what we've or leftovers. So that's a bit disappointing.
With him, the songs in these movies, they've sort of become a way for the writers to not have to deal with exposition of characters, right? Like these songs are doing a lot of the heavy lifting in terms of like, we have in this family 12 characters, and so each one of them, or at least five of them, will get a song. And in this song, we're going to sort of explore their inner world, and that's that, you know? So I do feel like perhaps, you know, if he was allowed to just write songs that were just like not meant to deliver all these things about the plot, about the characters, and just sort of like be more, you know, songs, and perhaps, you know, like Dos Oruguitas, or like, because I've been thinking Bebo, there's like one or two songs that I was like, okay, this one works, you know. But when it's just about the liver and sort of like this person is this because this isn't that, this is their conflict, that's where I feel like we've sort of like gotten a lot of that lately.
Yeah, and I don't think the songs here, I mean, the songs are doing a lot of work establishing who the characters are. They didn't, to me, convey as much personality as a song like You're Welcome from Moana, which manages to develop that character while also telling jokes. And yeah, for me, this movie could have used a little bit more of that, but I want to go back and I want to push back on what you guys are saying about the villains. I agree with Carlos that there are villains in the world, but there are also existential forces pushing on us where we need to band together to fight them. And they're not necessarily represented through the machinations of one person. So having her need to band together with her family to kind of combat an unseen force, I do think that that has resonance and relevance outside of the movie. And that part of it didn't bother me as much. I do think this movie is taking Disney kind of to the midpoint between traditional Disney animation and Pixar. And part of what that means is that it's exploring more emotions more in depth and kind of studying like human relationships a little bit more than kind of a traditional fairy tale battle against an evil person.
But I will say that, you know, even with that, Coco has both of them. You know, Coco is a movie about how this family, you know, the grandma doesn't want him to play music and there's this conflict with her. But at the same time, there is a villain who commits murder, you know? It's like, it's one of those villains that you're like, this guy, it's terrible, and betray his friend and, you know, killed him. And so to me, it's like, you could have both of them and sort of like blend them together in a way that feels interesting and realistic, you know? But the whole idea that now we're only getting sort of like, you know, these random forces, like in Raya and the Last Dragon, the villain is also just like this, you know, strange entity, mumbo jumbo thing that you're looking at, you know, instead of like anything tangible. And so I feel like there is a way to have both of them.
Yeah, but in Raya, there is also interpersonal conflict and there are characters who screw up. But I don't know. We could talk about the interconnected
web. I like
web
that this is now the episode about villains.
Bad people or screen are fun.
I mean, I'll always take a Scar.
Oh, heck yes.
We've been talking about Disney's evolution in different ways. And another one of them is that Disney has kind of moved its stories around the world a little bit. I mean, Moana is set in the South Pacific and Raya is in Southeast Asia. You know, Pixar movies have Coco set in Mexico and Luca is set in Italy. Like, Disney and Pixar seem to have kind of discovered the rest of the world in a way that is different from the way they were trying to explore the world in like the Three Caballeros in the 40s. How do you feel they're pulling it off here?
I actually think the Three Caballeros and Saludos Amigos weren't, I mean, of course, the reason why they exist, you know, and why they were created is very problematic and questionable. But I do feel like in watching them, there was a real interest in portraying, you know, Latin American countries and their traditions and their cultures in a way that felt, not, I don't want to say super authentic, but I do feel like there was something interesting to them that I don't really see in how we're portraying them now. You know, I feel like it has gotten better, but also at the same time not, you know, because I feel like we only get pastoral, rural depictions of Latin America, even in Coco or Encanto, you know, and if I remember correctly, in those other movies, you could see some of the cities in Latin America, and it was a positive light that sort of blended, you know, what Latin America can be in the rural and the urban with movies like, you know, Coco and Encanto. As beautiful as they are, I feel like to an extent they tend to perpetuate the idea that Americans think that, you know, Latin America is still just, you know, people in the countryside.
I was very much going to agree with that. Just even thinking, as Carlos was talking, the song for Bahia was playing in my head from, I think is the Three Caballeros. You know, they make it a point to, also include the cosmopolitan side of that. And there was even a line, this isn't Disney, but this is Vivo. There's a line where someone talks about Havana as being like a small town. And I'm like, I'm sorry, what? It's big, it's the capital. Okay, that's your opinion. It was just very strange. Yeah, I welcome the, you know, sort of exploration of the world through Disney. I'm bracing that it doesn't mean that It's a Small World is going to get a movie themed makeover. But I want to see, I guess, other kinds of stories, kind of along the lines of what Carlos was saying about, yes, we also have big cities, but there's other stories there too. you know, I'm curious to see more people take this on, not just Disney either, because I'm sure more stories will come out that don't play within those same sort of lanes that then will be able to, you know, show a little bit more, express more creativity. I mean, one of the things about Three Caballeros is that it was so inventive. It uses all these different techniques, and it's very, there's moments that almost seem abstract in how modern the animation is itself. Those are the kinds of risks that we're just not seeing these days.
Yeah, I mean, it seems like there's been a trade-off where you have less of the kind of... I mean, I actually recently watched Saludos Amigos, and it's pretty dated in its portrayals. You know, where there seems to be some trade-off where, like, there are efforts being made to represent these cultures in a sensitive way that has the voices of people who are from the places being depicted. It seems like a lot of that work is being done, but what you're saying is that there's more work to be done in telling these stories.
Oh yeah, we're not done.
Is it really that people from these countries are being very involved in the making of this? If we think about them, you know, like the directors are still, you know, directors that have directed other movies. They bring a co-director and co-writer who's a Latina. I don't think she's Colombian. You know, for Coco, there was a Mexican-American co-director who, when the movie won the Oscar, he didn't win the Oscar because he was a co-director. He's not listed as a main director. And even with Soul, you know, the co-director who was a black writer, he did not win the Oscar because he was not listed as an actual director. They're sort of co-directors in a way that's, you know, is the voices that really are from those cultures. And I just don't know how much of the, you know, I'm sure they have consultants or whatnot, but I would love to see, you know, a director from that country or from the background, like, giving a shot at, like, making their movie. And, you know, with these movies that cost so many millions of dollars, you know, the studios don't want to take risks. You know, they want to bring people that already have been sort of proven in that. So there's a lot of things going on. I just wouldn't dare to say that the people from those cultures are really in charge just yet.
Yeah, I mean, it feels like part of it is that there's so much catching up to do, and they clearly have, like, a climbing the ladder system where you start out as an assistant director and work your way up. And so they're kind of, it seems like they're giving opportunities to people and having them come in and consult on these movies. But if they're not winning the Oscars, that's a problem. I guess my last question is, how much time do you guys feel needs to pass before the next movie with Lin-Manuel Miranda songs?
Can we take a break for 2022? I feel like he should go on, like, book leave or something.
Yeah.
It was like, you know, like, just the perfect time, because, like, well, In the Heights was supposed to come out in 2020, and that was,
exactly,
you know, what that was pushed. And I think Bebo also was, like, you know, I don't know if that was ready for 2020 or not, but, like, they dropped it in the summer, and then Encanto, and then, you know, his directorial debut. So I feel like...
And he keeps showing up in documentaries.
Oh, my gosh, yeah.
Yeah, and I think he showed up in Summer of Soul very briefly.
Right. Take a break. Go away with us for the summer. We'll go upstate.
Yeah, go upstate.
Well, we want to know what you think about Encanto. I think it's safe to say we enjoyed it. Find us at facebook.com/PCHH and on Twitter at PCHH. That brings us to the end of our show. Thanks to both of you for being here.
Thank you.
Thank you for having us.
And of course, thank you for listening to Pop Culture Happy Hour from NPR. If you have a second and you're so inclined, please subscribe to our newsletter at npr.org/popculturenewsletter. And we will see you all tomorrow.